Good morning and welcome to the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is Thursday, the 23rd day of July 2020. And my name is Peter Wickham. Second time in for the week. Happy to have the opportunity to chat with you on this momentous occasion. Grateful to Joanne Hague for sizing around and giving me the opportunity to participate in this discussion today. I think, as you know, I live for politics, and this will be certainly a very political program. Happy to offer my views and also happy to share. Special thanks to John Stout for his technical support this morning. He will be your producer this morning. He's a person who will answer the phone and who will put me through fairly quickly. We go all the way until 2 p.m. I think we have a lot to talk about today, so there should not be any problem as filling that lane, that time. As you know, you can reach me on 434-1790. You can also use the WhatsApp 266-IVOB. It's available to me here. And also, you can email me directly at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. So those are the facilities. John and I are here with you. And as is the custom, I'll start with a few preparatory remarks. Naturally, today, I go directly to this issue of the cabinet reshuffle. The logic behind the reshuffle, and I will start with the comments I would have made before. And some of you may recall when the government was established in the first place, there was questions, or there were immediate questions about the size of the cabinet and the feeling that the cabinet was too large. At the time, I explained, certainly not defended, but I explained that in the situation that Prime Minister Motley found herself in, which is a situation that a few prime ministers in the Caribbean have found themselves in, but not a whole lot. So we look at Keith Mitchell, for example, who won all the seats of following yourself in a similar situation. You would need to ensure, in as much as you have your pick of anyone who can be in the cabinet, you need to ensure level of stability to the government. So the first point is that you would include those of whom you are afraid. Secondly, you would include those who possess special skills that you need. And then thirdly, you would include those who were unemployed and needed a job. Basically, that led us to a situation where we had one of the largest cabinets, or the largest cabinet in our political history. And I've made the point on more than one occasion that the size of the cabinet had nothing to do with the arguments that were put forward in many instances that Barbados necessitated cabinet of that size. It had a lot more to do with the politics of the situation. We are now 2.5 years later, or almost 2 years later. And the strategy has changed. The strategy has changed consistent with the times. It has changed consistent with the fact that after 2 years, the Prime Minister has had a chance to observe people in terms of the utility and also in terms of the fit that individuals may have. She has had 2 years also within which we have had this COVID experience that has changed our objectives in many instances. And she has to look at these issues in addition to the fact that she now has new imperatives that were not presenting themselves back in 2018 when we had the last election. So one of the imperatives is the issues relating to the economy. Our economy is in a dire condition now that it was not in before. So naturally saving money, saving resources is a larger concern than it would have been when she would have taken over office. She also has to rebuild the tourism sector. That is a new imperative that has to be dealt with. She will also have to deal with the question of migration, because of course, we have to look at the numbers of people we have in Barbados now, and we would want to ensure that those numbers are kept as high as possible. So we have the temporary stamp and so on, all of which will help to bring the numbers up. So against that background, we have some changes that have been announced. And you know the changes perhaps better than me. We have two incoming ministers, which would be Senator Lisa Cummings, and then the Honorable Ian Gill, Gooding Edger. In both of those instances, I've argued that those two individuals seem to speak to two of the emerging issues that the Prime Minister has to deal with. Senator Cummings is very critical regarding the issue of tourism and dealing specifically with the migration of, or the movement of thousands and thousands of people off cruise ships through Barbados and out. Yesterday, the Prime Minister indicated that it was a very successful program. It has earned Barbados some revenue that was much needed, and it was also well executed. So the presumption that Senator Cummings was central to that in her role at Port Authority, one would argue that she has earned herself a pick because she is now in a position where she can also advise a lot better regarding the rebuilding of this whole tourism industry, which is very different from what it was before. We all know Mr. Ian Biddin-Edgell quite well. Ian Biddin-Edgell would have been involved in the National Insurance. He was also involved in the Barbados Transport Board. And I think we would agree that in both of those regards, he has performed reasonably well. The National Insurance Scheme continues to have challenges, but certainly less challenges than it would have had when he took over. And the Transport Board seems to have been in better shape, certainly with the arrival of these 33 buses, better shape than it has ever been before. So against that background, the Prime Minister seems to want to reward these individuals and bring them in to help to address some of the new challenges that she had. The question of saving money is always a factor. And while one would argue that all of the ministers were serving a purpose before, I think the reality of current realities would suggest that there are other priorities in many instances that we have to deal with. So as a result, we have five ministers exiting, and those five ministers have gone out, and you know the individuals. What I would say is that it cannot be a pleasant thing for a prime minister to remove a minister. Among the persons that we are seeing are individuals who she has had contentious relationships with in the past, and indeed we are seeing an individual, one in particular, with whom she has been very close personally in the past. So one cannot argue that the cuts have been done in a way that have been sent to send a political signal of any sort. I think the cuts were done in a way where she assumes that particular skills and abilities were things which she could embrace in other areas and bundle in and deal with in those areas. So those in terms of where it was removed. Changes, well, the changes have to be made where people come in. So there were switches and movements in many instances. I'm particularly keen on the movement of Wilfred Abrahams to Home Affairs, where he will deal with information and public affairs. He will do a lot of the work that Lucy Moore would have done, but he also has other responsibilities as well. The movement of Dwight Sutherland to youth sports and community development away from the small business development area. The minister, John King, is now in the office of the prime minister, which has now taken on culture. The prime minister has always had a keen interest in that. She will work along with the prime minister in that regard. And Charles Griffith, who is now in the Water Resources Ministry, remembering that St. John is the worst affected regarding water. We now have a minister within the Water Resources Ministry, namely Charles Griffith, who will be in a position to answer a number of those issues that people in his constituency are having. What this tells me is that the Prime Minister is looking forward to 2023. The Prime Minister has identified that there are certain weaknesses in terms of performance that she has to address. And I would say to the Democratic Labour Party, the fact that Peter Phillips is being positioned in this way tells me that the Prime Minister is not, quote unquote, making sport, and that she sees St. John as a constituency that she needs to satisfy and she needs to keep. St. John had pretty critical issues regarding water, regarding transportation. Those were the two things, also regarding roads. So those issues appear to be systematically addressed over time. And one would argue that if the water issue is dealt with, hopefully the resources for the transportation are there now, then she would be in pretty good shape. So, of course, we have the others that remain. And I just want to say very quickly that the whole idea of a cabinet reshuffle is nothing unusual. David Thompson reshuffled his cabinet 1 year in. Kamala Prasad Bisesa reshuffled her cabinet several times during her 5-year term. Dr. Keith Mitchell, who is in a similar situation with Prime Minister Martin, he reshuffled his cabinet already. He had the election around the same time, and he has made cabinet changes already, acknowledging the fact that after 2 years, one would make changes. So this is normal. It is natural that a leader would want to assess the priorities. What I do find is curious, though, and I just want, hopefully, to have some conversation about this, is that she has done the changes in a way where she anticipates the reading of a throne speech. The prorogation of Parliament usually signals a need to move in a different policy direction. So as a result, we need to have a different throne speech to empower that policy direction. So the question is, what is causing this? She has not hinted as to what it could be. So we are left to wonder, when these changes take place and the throne speech is read, what will be the content and what would be the focus that she would want to take on. Now, in as much as she already has a constitutional mandate to deal with 5 years, clearly something has changed. We know that COVID may very well be it. Something has changed, and now she will want to look forward in terms of the next 2.5 years to see what needs to be done. And I'm anxious to understand what is the reason. Because generally speaking, we do not have a prorogation when we have cabinet reshuffles. Prorogation usually speaks to something else. So there's clearly something bigger that has to happen. And she did indicate in her speech that there were some big things that were likely to happen. So we have to sit tight and keep our seatbelts fastened, because there's going to be some heavy politics going on in Barbados over the next few weeks. Just to tell you very briefly that I've invited Ms. Verda de Pisa, the leader of the Democratic Party, to join me at some point during the course of this morning. So I'm hopeful that she will be able to join us and we can link for a few minutes and discuss her reaction to these changes. Dr. Brastax, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your good staff.
Thank you.
The world is blessed most by men who do things and not by those who merely talk about them. Therefore, I am subject to correction. Authority without wisdom is like a heavy axe without an edge fitter to bruise than polish. I am one that is still of the belief that we have too many public holidays in this country of ours, Barbados. Yet, at the same time, one is always reminded of production. Come August 1st, 2020, is one of two close public holidays, Emancipation Day, with the cancellation of this year's October, will be a celebration of the second public holiday in the month of August. 2020 Kadumet Day. Well, on Kadumet Day, a local judicial officer was instrumental in having Kwapova Festival celebrated on the Ermine-Bourne Highway, commonly called the East Coast Road. And since then, he made very constructive comments on lands on the same East Coast Road, which is set up for sale, really too far that the land was owned by the Kwong, and advised that the Kwong should purchase it for the benefit of all Barbadians. The well-experienced judge who served overseas at the highest level, in my opinion, is worthy of the Penguin vacant appointment for the replacement of the Honorable Sir Marston Gisdom. However, it was quite interesting to note that the Arnold Khalil Gray's name was mentioned in last Sunday's Sun amongst the possible replacement. Although they are all qualified, I believe that the Honorable Justice William Chandler and Attorney at Law, the Honorable Star name, should be added to the list of possible CJA picks. And in conclusion, sir, Mr. Peter Rickham should be highly commended for his professional analysis on the Guyana's election. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you so much, sir, for that. I have already heard many good things about me in relation to Guyana, so I want to thank you for saying that. Just to tell you very quickly that the comments regarding the Chief Justice, of course, the last week Sunday's article was speculative. The Chief Justice's appointment, as it stands, is still a situation in which we can talk as much as we want about suggestions as to who it could and could not be. Ultimately, the only person who knows who will be the new Chief Justice is the Prime Minister. That is one of the things which she does in her own deliberate judgment. The opposition leader will know moments before the rest of us know. But as I understand it, the opposition leader does not have a consultative role. He just has to be advisor for him. So that's the way it is. But it was an interesting article on Sunday. I read it also, and I thought it was interesting. The suggestions that were being made, many of which I approve of. The Honorable William Chandler, His Honor William Chandler, Justice Chandler, would have taught me at the Barbados Community College. I have the highest regard for him. I think he would make an excellent Chief Justice. But of course, there are other considerations and other persons to be considered. So, Donald Brastocks, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me well?
I am hearing you quite well, yes.
Good. I just want to touch on three subjects quickly, because I imagine that you have a lot of people who want to get on the line. Number one, you made a remark earlier pertaining to the water wars in St. John. Okay, we, the Democratic Labor Party, I want you and all there to know, we have been doing our part in going up there and assisting the people of St. John, right, in particular areas we can get to and help them out with the water, where the MP for that area has fallen down in tremendously. In the town hall meeting, that was a complete negative situation from the videos and what you have saw, which I'm sure you have seen. Okay, so just to let you know and everybody else know there that we do our part and we take everything seriously. Okay, number two.
Before you go to number two, would you care to say who you are speaking? Who is it that's speaking? Because you said that the DLP, you are not the DLP, you are who, sir?
This is Adrian Bascom.
Okay. Number two. You speak on behalf of the Democratic Labor Party, generally, or just in St. John?
Generally. Number two.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Number two. Okay. Number two. This, I found that certain people are defending this pertaining to COVID-19 and what is going on. The visitor's stamp, why in one hand it can be good, economically speaking, for Barbados to bring in monies that we've been lost, not only of us, all over through the Caribbean, worldwide, and what have you. On the other hand, I think, and a lot of people agree, that it's quite dangerous. So when you have Mr. Prasad and other people trying to defend and say, if you care about Barbados, it doesn't matter what side of the political divide you're on, why you would want to oppose. There's reasons why you want to oppose. People are afraid to travel. You've heard people overseas say, it sounds good, but it is not wise to want to travel to Barbados, or not only Barbados, any other island for that matter. Because these people are taking this COVID-19 virus very lightly, I find. Even here, as you will know, that's why we would have the Czar coming on and saying what he said on the TV some time ago. And that's another topic altogether, because you can't say one thing or come and drop certain measures and rulings, and then you have people doing contrary. Because if you're making a ruling or you want to have more stricter measures, one ruling should go for all. It seems like it's going for a select set of people. And then you can see another kind of people of the, let's just say, the so-called higher echelon in society doing as they like and partying and having a good time. And even certain government officials, when they come on the television, you have, as I heard a recent moderator on another radio program say, it starts from the top. It starts from the top. So you can't come and tell me, don't put my hand in the cookie jar when you are doing it. You have to lead by example. Don't just tell me, don't do as I do, but do as I say. That can't work. That's why we are having so much problems. The average people out there are confused with a lot of mixed signals that are not only coming from certain health authorities and members of government as well. So if you're going to have a ruling, put out messages out there, be clear in what you're saying. Number three, Lisa Cummings, I questioned the fact that she has gained the post of tourism minister. How big is her knowledge on tourism? Yes, she is the chairman of the Port Authority, and she may have some knowledge. What is going to happen? What is still happening with the boats and the ships that are still out there? Are they not aware that it's still that the longer they are there is damaging the reefs? What is Kurt Humphrey going to do about that? There are a lot of questions that have been posed by the Democratic Labour Party in all different areas, and the Prime Minister, the Honorable Mayor Moore Morley, and others need to come forth, right? Don't put other people to do it. You come out and answer questions that have been asked to put everything to rest. That is all I have to say. Have a good one.
Don't put down. You put down? Yeah. No, I'm sorry that you put down because you said a lot of very misleading things. Some would argue that you told some lies, but I wouldn't go as far as that. I would just say you said some misleading things. And I wanted to challenge you regarding a lot of the things that you said. So let's start, for example, with the suggestion that the minister fell down. The MP for St. John fell down. He said he fell down in terms of water delivery, in terms of dealing with issues. I think it's a bit unfair for you to say that. To the best of my knowledge, he was at the meeting and he fielded questions from members of the St. John audience regarding the issues that were having. They were being issues that they were having. I believe it was him that scheduled the meeting. So the idea of saying that he has fallen down, I think it's a bit unfair because there are many that would argue that he has done what was in his capacity to get answers for people if it was that you wanted answers. I'm having difficulty understanding whether the DLP, you say you speak on behalf of the DLP, does it like the stamp or it does like the stamp? If it does not like the stamp, perhaps the Democratic Labour Party would want to tell us, and we have Verda DePisa coming on shortly, and she will be able to give us clarity. If they are opposed to the stamp, what exactly are they proposing as an alternative in terms of jumpstarting the tourism industry? The stamp, to me, has been widely received, well received across the world in terms of the idea. Most people have said that the concept is a novel one and it sounds good. And I am anxious to understand the basis of the concern that this individual has. And I think that you can't get away with just saying that there are problems. I think we need to specify what exactly it is you're concerned about and if you think that the problems outweigh the potential benefits. And then finally, this whole idea of boats damaging reefs. It sounds to me like this is something that you've concocted in your mind, and I would be anxious to hear the environmentalists, the biologists speak to that issue and explain what exactly it is that these boats are doing to damage reefs. To the best of my knowledge, they don't weigh anchor, and certainly if they do, they would weigh anchor somewhere that there are no known reefs. So I feel that you can't be excused, and I let you get a good run because you said you were supporting Democrats in the party. Has to have the opportunity to put it safe. But at the same time, you can't tell lies on people. And that's something that, you know, we can't compliment. Anyhow, we'll take another call. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham. How are you doing?
I'm good, sir. Yourself?
Yeah, but I'm a bit up and down, but I want to ask you a question concerning this Ghana election. Because, to be honest, I don't understand. So I hope you can help me. Why was the reason that the first count was rejected?
The first count was rejected because the information that was presented by the Region 4 returning officer did not match the statement of polls that everyone else had. So he was reading from documents that were foreign to observers, were foreign to the other political parties, and they appeared to be a fiction of his imagination, a figment of his imagination. And that was the initial problem that led to a request that there should be a recount in not only Region 4, but in all of the regions to verify what was exactly in the ballot boxes, because the state of the polls that he was presenting appeared to be fictitious. Next question.
The next question is, why was 115,000 votes rejected in the last count by the ruling party? That can substantiate that those 115 votes were not valid?
Well, what you have to ask first, sir, is whether the ruling party, as you called it, is in a position to be able to reject 115,000 votes. Both the Guyana High Court Chief Justice and the CCJ, the Caribbean Court of Justice, have been very clear regarding the basis on which votes can be rejected at the level of the ballot box and then can be rejected thereafter. What both courts have said is that once a vote satisfies a certain basic condition in that it is not spoiled and it gets into the ballot box, it has to be counted regarding what they call a prima facie validity. Any validity beyond that, which is consistent with the kinds of issues that are being raised by the APNU team, have to be dealt with in the course of an election petition. So what I would say in response to your question, sir, is that it is misleading for you to suggest that the APNU has the capacity to reject votes as being invalid. The capacity to reject votes as being invalid on the basis that they are claiming is that within the realm of the High Court of Guyana in the course of an election petition. So to the best of my knowledge, all of the votes that have been recounted are considered valid votes because they have satisfied what the Chief Justice and the Caribbean Court of Justice have claimed, it's have stated, is the prima facie validity. Anything further?
In my opinion, honestly and true, I feel that this guy election should be held over.
And who is going to supervise it?
Huh?
And who will supervise it?
Who will supervise it?
Yeah.
Somebody got to supervise. I feel that all the votes that people vote, you should have a stub or something, be sure that is a valid vote. And if that is not happening, I can't see how this year could be a fair election.
Yeah, but sir, how do you assume that that's not the case? I have not heard any concrete evidence to suggest that that's not the case. Mr. Lewenthal has said that 115,000 votes do not have poll books and stubs. That's what he has said, right? Mr. Lewenthal's question, the statement of polls presented by Mingo are correct and true. And I think that most other people understand that those statement of polls are fiction. So by him saying that, it doesn't help me because as far as I'm concerned, I would need to see evidence of that. And the CARICOM team has said that there's no evidence of that on the scale that he's suggesting it. And on that basis, they're not convinced that he has a problem. I will go further and say to you, sir, that if you want to do over an election, okay, and if that was an option, the challenge that you're immediately having is that another election can clearly not be supervised by this GCOM. And certainly the chief elections officer has been behaved far too politically for him to be considered in the future. And Mr. Mingo, who is a returning officer for Region 4. So basically all of those individuals can't be part of any new election region. So if you say do of an election, my question would be who will be supervising it? But I thought we're talking about the budget today, though.
About the...
You want to talk about the budget?
Budget, or you mean the changes?
So not the budget, the changes, yeah, the cabinet changes.
But the only problem I got with the changes, I want to hope my boy Edmund get out of the cabinet. That's the only thing. But all the rest...
How your boy who?
Edmund, Mr. Edmund Hinkson.
I love that
Edmund.
He's your boy?
Yeah, well, I don't know him personally, but I just like, there's a lot of things about him that I like. But
he will have more time to spend with you now.
No, well, as I told you, I don't know him, but that was the only query that I had concerning the changes. But no, I like the change with Dougie moving somewhere else.
Well, I know if you remember many years ago in Jamaica, they had under Prime Minister Manley, a major scandal that involved PJ Patterson. PJ Patterson resigned from the cabinet. We don't know whether he was resigned or he was put out. But a year later, PJ Patterson became Prime Minister of Jamaica. So in light of that, we don't know whether those who have been asked to stand down at this stage have been asked to stand down for good reasons or bad. So you never know.
One other thing before I go, there's a particular name that was mentioned for the Chief Justice, which is my personal friend, Patterson. Tell him I would like you to get it. The spot is a good boy. But
you know...
Yes. That his ears might be against him because I think he's 2 years old, a year old than me. But Pat, to be honest, boy, Pat is a real nice guy. And I feel he
would. What?
Huh?
What I like is the way that you talk and you say that this person should get second. He's your good friend. So you like Edmund, and Edmund should be in the cabinet. And you like Pat as a chance to him. You think he would make a good Chief Justice because you like him. But that's not a problem.
But I like we went in the early stages, Pat and I went to school together.
Okay, so you think he's a good guy, a good pick
from
CJ, of course.
No, I know he's a good guy. You probably should go on Boston's Road and drink beer and eat chicken and think, well, are you American sport?
Positive.
All right, sir. Good chatting with you. You know, in the Caribbean, there's always a good way to decide who should get a job. Is who you like the boss. I can't really argue with that. Dr. Brastox, good morning. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Hey, Martin.
Good morning. Yes, how are you?
Yeah.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm great. And yourself?
I'm fine, thank you. It's nice to have you on board.
Thank you.
I just want to say as well, I would like Pat Cheltenham or Mr. Haynes to be, you know, two of those are the good. Those are people that has the law, that know law big, as we were saying, and they have experience. And I think
Leslie Haynes.
Yes, they're two. The vote is between two of those. Experience, you know, and not only that, they have an ear of listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
They have an ear for listening. They just don't drag you off. Don't care who you are. They listen to you. And
pros and cons.
Yeah, those are qualities that you look at for persons when you're going to put them in particular jobs. But I also called to tell National Insurance, I want them to know that the grass is growing and the horse is starving. Peter, have a wonderful and a blessed day.
But ma'am, don't run.
Okay.
Because I wanted to ask you about the pros and cons of the two individuals that you have mentioned, Mr. Leslie Haynes and Mr. Pat Cheltenham.
Because
this gentleman was just saying just now that Pat Cheltenham is a little on the older side.
Mm-hmm. I have worked with those men, and I have worked with those men, you know, and I worked alongside them, but I have worked with those gentlemen in the catering business, and you could approach those gentlemen, and you know you ask them a question, and they're so willing to hear you, and put you on the right side. And I remember one time Pat Chatham, I spotted him on pretending to something, and he said, you know what, you come to my office and let's see what we can do for you. And I said, well, you know, I cannot afford you. He said, I never say anything about cost. Come to my office and let's talk. And, you know, and that made me feel this is a person, you know, that has a care for purse, anyone at all.
Okay.
So I was like between two of those, you know, for their professionalism and their kindness to persons.
All right, so that's your vote. And your point about National Insurance is well noted. And certainly I'm hoping that the NAS is aware of the fact that there are a lot of people out there who are waiting anxiously for a check from them or a deposit from them. All right, thanks a lot for calling, ma'am. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on 434-1719. Say good morning and welcome. Remember, you can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. And yourself?
I'm fantastic. I'm glad that you are great as well. Just putting in my two cents worth as a young Barbadian, as it relates to the reshuffle of the cabinet. You know, I've listened to some of your viewers, and with change, everybody is going to be upset. Like the previous caller who said, you know, she knows Mr. Cheltenham, not personally, but she knows him because, you know, there was some sort of interaction. You know, people will have their own opinions. As a young person, I'm saying that the prime minister did what was needed at this time across the board. I'm sure you know, look at the polls and different stuff like that. Can you validate the numbers? But in actuality, there was need for some shift. I wouldn't say that it is a case where, you know, it's punishment, but it also sends a message to the other ministers now who would resume as of the 8th. A lot of attention onto Lisa Cummings, you know, whether she's qualified to do the job or not. You see, with tourism, it is so diverse that I think Kerry's time was exhausted, and he did his contribution, and I think that she's pushed him in the right area, whether people would like it or not. But to be honest, she has the face value. She did fantastic work with the Port Inc. And that's the type of face, not only looking at her outwardly, you know, how she dresses. I must commend her. She dresses extremely well. But there is a lot I think she has to offer. And we need to give a chance. A lot of people are upset about Hinkson. And again, I am not politically here to say B, C, or D. But I'm looking at what you would have done when you had a ministry. Don't want to go and individualize everything, but I commend her for adding Mr. Ian Gunnar Edgell as well. I mean, I saw him on the back bench, you know, his contribution both to the transport board when he was there and as well as National Insurance. Fantastic job. So I think the reshuffle is not more of your time is exhausted or you didn't do good or you did good and we thank you for this or that. But it is where we need to go. Post-COVID-19, you know, what is Barbados really doing? We need people who are going to have innovation to take us to another level. So to the Prime Minister of Barbados, I commend you for it because there needed to be some shift. Unfortunately, in everything we do, there are some people who would be, you know, disadvantaged in the sense that they don't wake up. The only person that I am a little concerned about, Peter, is Nero. And I'll tell you why. I do not think I do not think that he should have been in that ministry. I'll tell you why. If you look at his constituency, if you look at his passion, I think he should have been given a different ministry. I think that was not the right ministry for him, and as such, he was not able to excel. I don't want to go too deep, but that's my take on him. I think he was placed in the wrong ministry, but as she said, you know, we are still going to pull on some of these resources, and if it is that he goes in or under somebody else, to work, you know, intermittently until, you know, she revises again. Because, I mean, she has the power to do the shake-up. And I hope that if they are listening, that they understand the accountability that they have to the citizens of Barbados. It's just not holding a ministry, but it's moving us forward. So I hope as of the 8th, when we resume, that they do look at their profiles. And I would urge them as well to get under the permanent sectors as well for these people who are sitting in sub-ministries and not doing anything, right? The long length of time you have to wait for applications and things to be approved, or it's at Peter's desk and we're waiting on Peter. How long is it going to take Peter to review and to sign, if you understand? So I wish all of them the best. I sincerely hope that they take their mantles and they look into their ministries very deeply to see where we're at, and not just taking over a seat. Oh, I'm Minister of Tourism, and what I say goes. No, look at how innovative we can be to move forward. Unfortunately, for those who go now on the back bench, it's not time to become bitter, but it is time to do some self-evaluation and get on with business.
Before you go, I just want to raise a small point with you regarding tourism. Do you think it's possible that the kind of role that Carrie Simmons played was very different to the kind of role that someone has to play now? Bearing in mind that tourism has to be rebuilt from scratch, as distinct from having a fairly sound base and saying that you're going to build on that. And it's possible that the kind of skills that you need to rebuild it are different to the kind of skills that you would have needed to maintain it at that level. And perhaps that's where Lisa presents herself as being someone that has those types of skills, while Carrie's skills regarding maintenance and development may very well be more useful over in the ministry.
Right? Yeah, I mean, Peter, you have we need some shows now to discuss and really dig deep into this. No doubt that Carrie has what it takes. But you know, sometimes like in life, you may have started out, you wanted to be a police officer, you did well, you have what it takes. But, you know, I think she is also challenging him into this. I think he got energy and small business entrepreneurship. Right, yeah. I think that's, And I think, I mean, if you look at Carrie, if you know Carrie, whether personally or on the governmental front line, I think where she's put him is where he needs to be, honestly. And the thing about it is there's no segregation. Nothing is wrong with Carrie. I mean, apart from, you know, officially handing over to Lisa, nothing is wrong with them sitting down and having conversations, you know, on, you know, this is where I saw it going. This is where, you know, I think you should go. But I honestly think, Peter, that with the guidance, that with the right guidance and the support, because I think that as a public, we are a little too negative. because she's not in the theaters yet. And then, you know, we're getting out. How is she qualified? What did she do? We don't know her. Yeah. We've no seen her surface. We have to give her the opportunity, you know, to lay the platform. So, Peter, believe you me, I will be watching and monitoring, as you you will be as well, to see, you know, how innovative and how deep she goes into the portfolio that she has. So we need to give her a chance.
Okay. All right, so, ma'am, thank you so much for calling and for making a solid contribution to the conversation today. You said we need to talk about it, and the conversation starts here, hopefully. All right, down the brass tacks. So just read a couple of WhatsApp messages. Peter, I disagree with the caller who challenges the idea that we should ask about the qualifications of Ms. Cummings. As taxpayers and voters, we have a right and a responsibility to question anything that informs and impacts on the role of a public officer, especially at the level that the person is assumed to operate. I think it is ridiculous to say or imply that we should not say is that right responsibly. Person goes on to say, I think we should start the love fest with the Prime Minister or any potential candidate for high office long enough to have a rational and unemotional conversation about the suitability of that individual for the post. Conversations are based on facts as far as possible. Another person says, I'd like to know what the over-the-counter charges bank. Now, being charged $5 for every check I write in the bank is telling me it's over-the-counter charges, even though I don't go into the bank. I do all my bill payments online. Most likely, the person cashing the check gets the same and might also be charged $5 as well. Certainly, I can't help you with that response. I can only assume that the banks have now determined that a person who writes a check ultimately will incur over-the-counter charges, because that also forces one of their tellers, one of their staff members, to be involved in the distribution of those funds. I guess the simple logic in all of this is that we have to go towards electronic payments, and I'm hearing that the National Insurance is also going towards electronic payments. Joanne Haig has asked me to make it clear that Charles Griffith has been distributing water through Haig Communications in St. John. She goes on to say that he has also been assisting the people of St. John, and is very empathetic to their needs. So the suggestion that he's not doing anything is an unfortunate one. And there were some other people on the chat saying a few things about the same caller who identified himself as a Democratic Party supporter. Yeah, suffice to say. Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. Morning. No.
Okay, fine. I had a really controversial contribution to make today, but I had to shift it actually to cater to what's happening on the ground. I would say, last time we spoke about the difference in the parties. You was observing that it's about halfway into the next election, before the next election. Yes. But I heard Ms. DePisa responded to the cabinet reshuffle. And as per usual, she's dealing with the context again. The government should do this, the government should do that. Can't come up with nothing concrete. Can't come up with the solutions or nothing concrete. The guy that he identified himself as a DLP caller, setting, questioning this, questioning that, can't come up with anything concrete. Now, the DLP administration, the last DLP administration, ran Barbados for 10 years. 10 years at least. Barbados and the elevated area part of the country had water issues. We weren't hearing these voices, Mr. Andrea, well, of them that now say he lives in St. John. We weren't hearing those voices. Now, prior to that, the Prime Minister Arthur had the cell plants, portable ones, down to push the water up in the higher elevations of the country. You don't even understand that they had honest drought at the time. That government came to office and did virtually nothing for the 10 years regarding the water situation. And now they're talking, even just before they left. They had the thing at Grove, they carried the project up Grove. They're supposed to again go on to Vineyard and up the hill onto St. John, St. Andrew, and St. Joseph. That was a project failure on their part. It was a project failure on their part. Then they wanted to go to borrow fresh money to did to do the project at Vineyard. They paid, some contractor that they gave for the full amount of water, and they're only getting half a monk. So they can't, they're not really, they could talk because they're entitled to talk, but they don't have no more right to speak about water shortage in Barbados. It's all of this, it's their failing. And then there's nothing now that popped out of the sky. But let me just touch on the cabinet reshuffle. I think it was more, the same as Peter talking about this body get demoted and this body get promoted. I don't think about it as demotion and promotion. It's strategic planning. That miss her. Because you see, she don't think that at that level. It's strategic planning. How can you demote a man like Minister Abrams? A man that was outstanding. That's not a demotion. That's not a demotion. That is strategic planning. But put the same Mr. Griffith in the water ministry. Like he would deal with that. But obviously he's representing St. John. That's strategic. Miss Lisa Cummins and Miss Ian Gooding Edgell. Everybody in Barbados should understand that these people had performed. They were Miss Lisa Cummins was a performer for maintenance work at university. She was performing long. Mr. Ian Gooding Edgell is said thing. So it's a matter about demoting anybody and promoting anybody. It's a matter about refreshing the cabinet with a new look and that sort of a thing, and preparing for the coming election. Now, you wanted to know how come that the Governor General would bring a thorough speech, because you got to understand that since COVID have placed everything on in a different context. So when the Governor General would have brought her thorough speech in the beginning of the term, she would have had a different, obviously a different perspective and different view. But you have to come now. That's like when you go out play cricket, you just say you don't know anything about cricket. But when you have to review the target that is being set. So that's what's being done. She had to review, the Prime Minister had to review the overall now target that you have to reach for the other 2.5 years or something like this. You understand? So it's not. So I think that's exactly what you had, because you would know that the Prime Minister have not brought her the budget. She brought the budget in the water, Sorry, you can't get the word completely right now.
You mean the
estimate?
Tone speech?
The estimate. Oh, no. Okay. She brought the estimates, but she had not brought, because when she was about to bring the budget, the same COVID, took over. So she said, listen, I can't really bring the budget now. So let's put that back for a little later. So I guess that with the throne speech now, you would get a different angle of what the government would do for the next, basically 2.5 years. Yeah. So,
A couple of things I wanted to say to you, though, sir. This starts my, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. A couple of things I wanted to say. In the context of looking at what are considered demotions, you recall when Chris Sinclair was moved from foreign affairs into social care? He was foreign affairs minister in 2008, and he was moved from there into social care a year later. Was that a demotion or was that a promotion?
That was strategic.
Thank you. Huh? And you would recall back in 1992, I believe it was. Was it 92? Yeah, no, it was after. When David Thompson was appointed as Minister of Sport and Youth Affairs, or Youth and Sport, and he was made a full minister, and he was taken from there and made a junior minister in finance. Was that a promotion or a demotion?
It was strategic again.
Thank you.
No, it was not a demotion. So, it was strategic, but it was put in.
It's strategic.
Huh?
It was strategic.
That's the same way, that you said we have to look at Abrams as well. A step away from AG,
Yeah. And then again, back in the 90s, when PJ Patterson was dismissed from Michael Manley's cabinet, was that a promotion or a demotion?
Well, I didn't follow that closely. So.
But that was obviously strategic, because PJ became prime minister about 2 years later.
Yeah.
So the point that I am making, and I'm supporting the comment that you made earlier, that it's easy to say that this is a demotion, this is a promotion, and this is this and this is that. Mm-hmm. The reality of politics is that all ministers are paid the same thing.
Yes.
While there may be appearances of seniority and juniority, if it's such a word, the reality is still that a prime minister will always want to make strategic changes from time to time to reflect the needs. And I agree with you in both regards that when Chris was brought from Foreign Affairs to Social Care, it appeared to be a demotion because there was a considerably less prestige. However, when he is in Social Care, ultimately he is more useful because that was the strategic need that they had at that time.
Yeah. And he, and don't forget the minister before him, which was with Law, the ones that introduced the programs, the summer camps, the pre-bus ride, and right? And he didn't get it implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Law didn't get it implemented, so it was strategic. When Mr. St. Luke came, he was able to get the program implemented. So that was strategic planning.
Mm-hmm.
It consisted of councils as well. Those are the three programs that they want to implement. And Mr. Law didn't get anything done with them. So you got to look at the whole context of where you place the people. That's like playing cricket. You put people in specific batting orders, in a specific batting order that will benefit the team. And this ain't got nothing to do with the motion and the promotion. And the case,
When you were a cricketer, what was your position in your useful days?
I was a top batsman.
You was what?
Top. You don't know about cricket.
But that's what you said.
Yeah.
You was a batsman, but yeah. There's no way that you could be a good night watchman. Was a good night watchman?
No.
So I agree with you, but I just say to you that there are some posts that are clearly problematic, and the night watchman will always be the night watchman.
Yeah, you're
a night watchman where you're just a man that comes.
Yeah, good. Yes. And in fact, the whole idea about
so,
night watchman.
So my question to you is, who's the night watchman in all of this?
You mean what? The new cabinet?
Yeah.
I identify the night watchman really. I think basically the cabinet is a good cabinet. You know, Miss.
You take the gun, night watchman on the other side.
They're all night watchmen, personally. They don't have any answers, man. All right.
Stasman, thanks a lot for calling. It was good chatting some politics with you. I have an email here from Carl Moore. It's good to hear from Carl. Carl is saying, Peter, I'm sure your view of the political chessboard must have you looking back at the early 90s when a breakaway group of four from the governing party automatically by the sides were immediately able to oust the three-member opposition. What are the possibilities here? Carl, that's the most intriguing question that you've asked, and certainly my sense before was that the size of the cabinet had a whole lot to do with avoiding just that. It will not take long for persons who are on the backbench now to take over, because in the final analysis, you can easily remove the current opposition leader of one. Having said that, however, I look at the characters of the person, or the characters, political characters that are on the opposition benches, Carl, and I have to say that I think it is unlikely. If you look at the four persons who have just gone to the backbench, I think that all of them have demonstrated a certain level of loyalty. And with regard to others, it's clear that the Prime Minister is feeling that she can manage any fallout that potentially comes. And I think that's the critical thing, that after 2 years, she feels herself in a better position to have a big backbench than she did 2 years ago, and she's able to manage those peculiarities. Interesting question and intriguing, though. Thanks, Carl, for that email.